You're in tune to KZSU Stanford. It's time for another edition of Raising Sand.
My name is P.S.C. Guillen. I am a 13 Romeo, which is a firefighter radar operator. My job is important because once we're set up and all ready to go, I can easily identify where the enemy is.
Call it in at 1649.
I'm here to keep my men safe.
My name is Amy Forza. I'm a student at Pacific Lutheran University. I've been in the Army ROTC program for 3 years.
I see myself as an Army officer in the Army Reserve going to graduate school.
My name is Private First Class Armando Juarez. I'm a 21 Bravo combat engineer. But I need a bigger challenge. That's why I joined the Army. A combat engineer is a specialist in demolitions, and we can build anything. I love my job.
Growing up in a Hispanic household, my parents always taught me dignity and respect. Now that I'm in the Army, I clearly understand what those words really do mean to me. My parents are very proud of me for what I'm doing and what a man I've become.
I can actually see the Army ROTC program working for me. I can see it changing me, developing me as a student, as a person, as a leader.
Before I joined the Army, I thought I wasn't really confident about myself. And now that I'm in the Army, I know I can do almost anything that I want to.
Before the Army, I didn't know where I was going. Now that I'm in, I see so many new possibilities.
The Army ROTC program has been a life-changing thing for me. I've learned a lot as a soldier, as a civilian. I've grown a lot in these last 3 years.
Army Strong to me means having the strength within myself and knowing that I'm a part of something bigger than me.
It gives you a lot of confidence and makes you a better person.
Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, and you just heard a segment from the video game America's Army, which is the topic of today's show. On August 6th, Hiroshima Day, a group of concerned anti-war activists protested outside Ubisoft, a video game development company headquartered in France with an office in San Francisco. The protesters stated that, essentially, this game acts as a recruiting tool for the United States military and promotes militarism among our youth. Today we'll hear from one of the protesters, Michael Reagan, whose research and writing is instrumental in bringing this game to public attention. We'll also talk to Bill Simpich, a civil rights lawyer and activist who presented the protesters' concerns to Ubisoft. Unfortunately, Ubisoft's public relations director did not respond to my invitation to speak today on behalf of the company. Before we begin our conversations with our guests, let's put into perspective the video gaming industry and its impact on American families. This data comes from Entertainment Software Association. United States computer and video game software sales grew 4% in 2004 to $7.3 billion, more than doubling industry software sales since 1996. 75% of American heads of households play computer and video games. In 2004, more than 248 million computer and video games were sold, almost two games for every household in America. The average game player is 30 years old and has been playing games for 9.5 years. In 2005, 95% of computer game players and 84% of console game players were over the age of 18. 87% of game players under the age of 18 report that they get their parents' permission when renting or buying games, and 92% say their parents are present when they buy their games. 42% of game players say they play games online 1 or more hours per week. In addition, 34% of heads of households play games on a wireless device, such as a cell phone or PDA, up from 20% in 2002. According to the Los Angeles Business Journal, the video game rental market in 2006 was worth $700 million, and the average price for a game rental is about $6. Almost all gamers rent games. Now, a U.S. military booklet on America's Army, the video game that we're talking about today, states that its goal is to build a game for Army strategic communication in support of recruiting. The game records players' data and statistics in a massive database called Andromeda. This is a tracking system that, according to Army Colonel Wadinsky, Players who play for a long time and do extremely well may just get an email seeing if they'd like any additional information on the Army. The America's Army website, however, is quick to point out that the Army respects players' privacy. The Army complains that player information is not linked to a person's real-world identity unless that person volunteers their identity to a recruiter. But it is not clear that recruiters have to give any sort of disclosure that a voluntary relinquishing of one's name is also an invitation to a player's statistical information. I do know, having looked at the website sampling the game, that recruiting is prominent, with links to contact a recruiter, talk to a recruiter, listen and watch video segments of recruiters, and hear from recruits themselves. In fact, the opening segment today was a promotion for a recent recruits, people that have just entered into the military, and talking about the futures that they expect with the military. The Army has spent more than $6 million to develop the game. Ubisoft is only one of the companies contracted for this game, and in a 2000 press release, Ubisoft, the multi-million dollar publisher of the console version of the game, wrote that America's Army is the deepest and most realistic military game ever to hit consoles, and it hopes that it gives players a realistic, action-packed military experience. Let's listen to a review by Andrew Seon Park, an editor of PC Magazine, who reviewed America's Army for GameSpot Live.
Thanks for tuning in to GameSpot Live. I'll be sitting in for reviewer Scott Osborne as we review America's Army Operations. America's Army is probably one of the most unusual games to be released this year because, although at a glance it looks a lot like any other first-person shooter for your PC, it was actually developed by the U.S. Army as a recruiting tool to help get new recruits to join the Army by giving them a sense of what Army training and what Army operations are about. Now, the game itself is available as a free 200 megabyte download from the America's Army website, but if you live in the U.S., you can also get it on CD by stopping by your local Army recruiter office. But if you're watching this video review, you're probably just more interested in finding out whether or not the game is good. America's Army models small-scale infantry fights between two teams of players. The main game mode is similar to the very popular online game Counter-Strike, where there are two teams of players that play for rounds that last for about 5 minutes. You can play either as the U.S. Army or the generic opposing force. The thing that's probably the most noticeable about the way America's Army plays is just how realistically it models its weapons. Different weapons have different amounts of kick, and you can also do things like crouch and lie prone, and your weapons will be a lot more accurate when you do that. Your guns can even jam on you if you're not careful. America's Army also has plenty of different movement options. You can crouch, you can lie prone, you can roll, you can crawl to the side. And you're going to need to do that in the maps because in a lot of cases there isn't a whole lot of cover. You're going to find the pace of most of America's Army's matches to be really fast-paced, really exciting, and surprisingly realistic. That's why the best way to enjoy America's Army is to play in a game with a good team. That's because in America's Army, as in most realistic shooters, one good shot can put you down. But of course, there's more to America's Army operations than just running around and shooting, because there's more to being in the Army than just running around and shooting. In order to play online, you're going to have to complete a number of preliminary training courses, which include marksmanship, an obstacle course, and also there's some new training modules available, like paratrooper training. Now, America's Army has already gone gold, which is why we're reviewing this game. That means that it's feature complete and it's ready to play, but the U.S. Army has plans to continue adding to the game by putting out new modules, new maps, and new kinds of training over the next couple of months. Should you play America's Army? Well, it's a very realistic, very fast-paced, exciting, and fun game. If you enjoy tactical shooters, if you enjoy realistic shooters, if you enjoy shooters that look good, yeah, you should give it a try. Now, shooters have advanced in the past few years to include lots of new options. There was last year's Halo on the Xbox, and there was also Battlefield 1942 earlier this year that both had vehicles. So the small-scale infantry combat in America's Army may seem a little limited to you if you're more used to other shooters like that. But since America's Army is free, really, you're just going to lose some time downloading the big 200 megabyte file. And again, the game is available also on CD. If you're a fan of shooters, America's Army is definitely worth a try. It's a surprisingly good shooter, and from the look of things, it's only going to get better from here.
That was a review of the product, America's Army. before talking to author and activist Michael Reagan, who wrote an article titled U.S. Military Recruits Children, America's Army Video Game Violates International Law, a little background may be in order. What the author is referring to when he writes that the game violates international law is the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights entering into force on the 12th of February 2002 the optional protocol to the Convention of the Rights of the Child and the Involvement of Children in Armed Conflict. You can easily find this entire protocol on the internet with a fast search. Now, the U.S. Senate ratified the optional protocol in December 2002. By signing and ratifying the optional protocol to the Convention of the Rights of the Child, the U.S. bound itself to comply with the obligations contained in the optional protocol. The protocol provides that the absolute minimum age for voluntary recruitment is 16 years old. It also instructs countries to set their own minimum age by submitting a binding declaration, and the United States entered a binding declaration raising this minimum age to 17. Therefore, recruitment of youth ages 16 and under is categorically disallowed in the United States. Now, the ACLU used the guidelines in the UN's protocol and found that the U.S. Army's use of the game and its recruiting practices in general violate international law. The ACLU is calling upon the United States to take immediate, meaningful action to bring its policies and practice on military recruitment of youth, treatment and prosecution of alleged child soldiers, and consideration of the asylum claims of former child soldiers into compliance with the optional protocol. The ACLU mentions a broad failure to recognize the importance of the optional protocol to safeguard the rights of children under the age of 18 from military recruitment and deployment to war, and to guarantee basic protections to former child soldiers, whether they are seeking refugee protection in the United States or in U.S. custody for alleged crimes. I talked to Michael Reagan on the phone and asked him how he first learned about the game America's Army.
Well, it was actually through a group I work with, Direct Action to Stop the War. We were considering what a good counter-recruitment program would be. There's been lots of counter-recruitment work by anti-war activists in the last, 5 years, at least since the Iraq War started. And we came across this video game. Actually, it's a training and recruitment tool that the U.S. Army is trying to pass off as a video game called America's Army. And we were really sort of stunned at how insidious this game was and the tactics that the Army was using to try to recruit and then later enlist kids in high school as young as 13 with this video game.
And the local company here, Ubisoft, is building at least a portion of this game. And recently, I think it was August 6th, Rosh Hashanah, there was a demonstration outside Ubisoft.
Right.
And you were there?
Yes. And Ubisoft is actually a French company, but its North American headquarters are in San Francisco. And they're the group that has the exclusive publishing rights to the America's Army console version. So that's versions that are available for the kinds of game systems you know that kids play in their homes, the Xbox and the Nintendo and all of those things. And the Army contracted with Ubisoft and other companies, including Digital Consulting Services and Gameloft and Secret Level, to make these console versions so that they could have better and broader access essentially to youth. I mean, they're really targeting an audience of disadvantaged kids who didn't have access to the computer version, the previous version, and to youth. They got a teen rating from the video game ratings board such that they could sell it to 13-year-olds, and it was all done intentionally to get the kids market.
We hear a lot about the digital divide, and then as you just mentioned, there's a certain trend to recruit children that are from underprivileged, let's say, background. There's a specific push towards getting this game into the hands of children who don't necessarily have access to computers.
Right, and I guess it's important to back up a little bit and talk. So there are essentially two versions of the game. There's a version for personal computers, PCs, that was the first version issued on July 4th of 2002, and And that was targeted specifically for sort of more privileged, college-bound young people who were savvy with technology and could figure out how to access the game online, download it, or at least pick up the CD-ROM from a recruiting station and install it on their computer on their own. That initial effort from 2002 to 2004 was extremely successful. The game, it was played online. It became one of the top 10 games of all time. It was downloaded millions of times and broke all these online records. And so the Army then wanted to figure out how to get sort of outside that initial target audience, the more privileged, college-bound young people, to a broader audience that included, you know, sort of more typical game players, the people who play the home versions, the console versions. And they did that with this release in 2005 of America's Army Special Forces that was done through Ubisoft and some of these other companies.
And actually, if anyone can get hold of this or get a sense of how this game plays, it's actually quite realistic.
Well, I mean, it is in certain ways. It's one of the biggest claims of both the Army and the game developer that this game is one of the most realistic Army experiences. They call it the virtual Army experience. It's a way to figure out what enemy career would actually be like. So the way the game is structured, when you start playing, you begin as a new enlistee, and you go to boot camp. You undergo sort of professional and military training through boot camp. You do target practice, and you have a drill sergeant and all of those things before going on to play actual combat missions, which are all staged in sort of, you know, anonymous Middle East cities and environments. And are actually, some of them are actually based on actual combat experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so the Army is trying to portray that experience that you go through in the video game as a, you know, real-world simulation of what the real Army experience is like. But in fact, the Army has explicitly excluded certain aspects of military service, especially combat service, such as violence. So all the violence that appears in the game is toned down. You know, when players are shot, it's just sort of, you know, video games now are often criticized for being extremely gory, and, you know, when your video game player is shot, there's all this blood and dismemberment and stuff. So the Army took all of that out of this video game. So players are shot in America's Army. The shot is represented by sort of little puffs of red smoke is how I would describe it. When players are killed, they just fall over. And that's sort of one aspect that the Army intentionally tried to put into the game to sort of take out the realism of what actual soldiers experience when they're doing the fighting, as a way to sort of sanitize warfare and the violence, you know, we see ongoing in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Again, with the popularity of video games, this game would be something that a child of 13 or 14 or 15 would look at and not really connect to the wider world or to history or even to current events like the war. It would be a kind of fantasy world. As a matter of fact, I have heard and talked with a lot of troops that have returned from the combat zones, and several of them have said they either, when they're going into battle, or when I say battle, they're going down, say, Fallujah in a tank, is one very clear description that I have. They're playing either heavy metal music and or thinking about the video games that they have played with in the past.
Right.
So there's a melding of fantasy and reality in some ways already.
There's actually an excellent book on that called Generation Kill, which talks about how, sadly, this generation has been so desensitized to violence that when soldiers are actually recruited and put in combat situations, it's just sort of a continuation of the sort of fun and games you'd experience in movies or video games or, you know, whatever music they're listening to. But it's also an attempt, the video game in particular is an attempt on the part of the Army to sort of shape that culture, to sort of get into youth culture and video game culture and sanitize combat, sanitize warfare, and really sort of militarize this next generation. One of the things that really stood out for me about the game was they have combat missions in the game that simulate real-world fighting experience in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there's one mission where America's Army players are fighting inside, you know, vaguely Middle Eastern hot-looking hospital with doctors cowering in the corners and things like that. I mean, that's a pretty direct simulation of the 2004 seizure of a civilian hospital inside Fallujah during the Battle of Fallujah, the second one in November, which was a blatant violation of international law in which the Army destroyed one hospital and then seized another hospital, saying it was furthering enemy propaganda. Now, including stuff like that in the game, fighting inside hospitals is clearly a way to sort of make that acceptable. Players used to the idea of, okay, you're going to be fighting in hospitals. Or another one is, there's a game environment. I don't know if it's linked to a specific mission, but players are playing on an oil rig. I mean, that's the net sort of attempt to sort of get those ideas acceptable, that this is what is going to be happening when you're actually serving in the military.
Well, and let's talk a little bit about the cultural presentations that they're offering, too. One of the things that I'm fairly clear of in the United States is that because it's such an insulated country, Americans tend not to have a really strong idea of what other cultures are like. And the kind of game that you're describing here emphasizes this. These are people, for example, what I'm hearing from you is these are people who are cowardly. I heard you use the word cowering. These are people that you don't really have to worry too much about because they're not like us. The simulation of the Eastern and Middle Eastern kinds of cities that they'll see, it's all unconsciously perhaps, but it's working to nullifies a whole culture and people, doesn't it?
The emphasis in the game is on sort of military tactics and training. So the people, the doctors you see in the hospital, for instance, are just completely secondary. I mean, they're not even an issue. So in the game, I mean, the Army says that part of the point of the game is so that people play by the Army handbook, so they play by the rules. You can't kill innocent civilians and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the game, if you're shooting in a combat situation and some of these people get hit, it's just completely irrelevant. It's not an issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of what happens in, you know, in combat. So it's as if they don't even factor into the equation, really. And it's pretty startling because a lot of the simulation environments are in urban centers. They're in
civilian areas.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So, it's pretty remarkable the degree to which they try to excise the people who actually live there.
Uh-huh.
In the game.
Let's talk about the recruiting side of this. You mentioned in your article, let me mention your article name again. It's The U.S. Military Workers' Children, America's Army Video Game Violates International Law. Let's talk about the database, which I think is going to be something of a shock to some of our listeners. The Andromeda database that you describe as all of the data that can eventually and more than likely is turned over to the military recruiters who can then get in touch with these young people.
Right. So for the online version of the game, the PC version, you have to register to play the game through the America's Army website where you can download it. And then once downloaded, the game tracks and records all player movement and progression, their career history as they go through basic training and choose a career as, you know, a technician or infantryman or whatever it is. And then records their success rate, their percentage of kills, how accurate they are in firing, and puts that all into a huge database that tracks the over 9 million registered players online into a database called Andromeda. And the Army says that that information is not linked to a real-world identity, so that's kept in this database that's linked only to a player's screen name, but that they will link the information if a player voluntarily offers up their personal identity. So what I think is interesting there is it's not really clear if the Army has any guidelines as to disclosing that if a person voluntarily offers up their information, if they know they're going to be disclosing their entire record from playing this game online. So, you know, in America's Army chat rooms, if a if a recruiter there asks a player what their real name is, or if in a tournament there are these local area tournaments that the Army stages for young people. If a recruiter there asks a person what their screen name is, that person doesn't necessarily know that they're volunteering all this information on their past history to the Army.
Okay, and on the recruiting side of that, the No Child Left Behind Act has within it a permission for the military actually to contact, to go into schools and quite actively try and recruit kids, or at least interest them enough in the military. And there's very little the schools can do to keep that out, to keep the recruiters out. If they do, they lose funding. There is an active opt-out movement, but the opt-out movement has been hindered. Certainly after April 2008, the opting out is even harder. So I think these are really important things for parents to know. I've heard that, for example, I think it's Chicago has a very strong military-oriented school, public school system. The recruiters have said, well, sure, you can opt out, but it's not going to stop us from calling your kid. One of the only ways that you're going to get your kid out of it is if your kid dies, and even then we're still going to try. So they're very upfront about that, certainly in that state.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. There was a report by the ACLU in May of this year, 2008, in which they specifically highlighted the No Child Left Behind as a violation of the UN optional protocol. Is now a good time?
The optional protocol on the involvement of children in armed conflict.
Right. So that was a protocol that the U.S. Senate ratified in 2002 and later signed a binding declaration saying that any recruitment of children under 17 years of age is categorically disallowed inside the United States. So the ACLU issued a report just this year to sort of track how the U.S. was keeping up with this optional protocol. And it pointed to one of the things you were just talking about, the No Child Left Behind Act, as a violation of the optional protocol, in particular because of this opt-out measure. Because children are being targeted inside their schools without parental consent, that it's a violation of the protocol and that the opt-out clause is problematic because it allows recruiters to go in without parental knowledge. Now, what the ACLU says is that the opt-out clause should be reversed. It should be an opt-in clause because the optional protocol requires parental consent for recruitment of children under 17, that parents should be opting in if they consent. And it points to the No Child Left Behind Act as a pretty blatant violation of this binding declaration that the United States.
I think it's fair to say that a lot of parents actually don't know this, that this whole No Child Left Behind Act has these clauses in it. I mean, I think a lot of parents are, first of all, they're working, they're busy and so forth, and they're not as involved as perhaps they ought to be or they can be. And this is happening all sort of under their radar. A lot of parents I've talked to, and in Raising Sand I've done a lot of interviews with military parents, particularly military mothers. A lot of them have been really quite astonished when they're, and I myself actually, really quite astonished when our kids come home and say, well, we're going to go to the military. And we don't really recognize the kind of coercion that's going on behind the scenes to our children, or a marketing of the military to our children.
Right. And I mean, it's a way to sort of guarantee a captive audience of, I mean, these are high school kids. These aren't people who are fully developed, mature adults. You know, this is a way to sort of get in there, disempower parents. Parents don't have the ability to consent to those visits, and also cut out school administration, so schools can't decide what sort of curriculum and program they want to provide to their own students.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, talk a little bit about the demonstration that you had outside of Ubisoft on August 6th.
Well, we had a demonstration on August 6th, which is Hiroshima Day, outside of Ubisoft. We had been trying to contact the company for weeks, requesting a meeting just to talk about their involvement in the game and the effect that the game is having on kids, recruits, and obviously the ongoing wars. in Iraq and Afghanistan. At first, Ubisoft was a little skittish, but then we had a telephone conversation and later an actual sit-down meeting with them in which they sort of expressed that they were vaguely sympathetic to the issues that we brought up, that they had, in fact, created an ethics committee internal to Ubisoft to sort of look at their role in working on this game and working on any future versions. And they said they may at some point decide to stop working on it. But, I mean, our feeling is that there's a version coming out in September, version 3.0, and the Ubisoft company has a 10-year contract that's set to expire in 2015 with the Army. You know, we feel if the Army is really, if Ubisoft is really serious about no longer working on this game that pretty clearly recruits kids and is pretty clearly a violation of the optional protocol, that they should break their contract with the Army on this game, that they should no longer work on any further versions, and that they should make all those declarations public instead of just sort of, you know, hinting at them in conversations.
Well, the truth of the matter is that Ubisoft has been posting record profits, and I think this is one of their most profitable games. So they really are in a quandary there. They've both got the military contract, which is with the federal government in that case, and they're making a lot of money. I mean, this is the essence of a capitalist profit-making industry, isn't it?
And it's kind of, you know, symptomatic of what's going on in the military in general in terms of handing over what used to be military functions to private companies for private profit, and this is just another way to do it. And from Ubisoft's perspective, it's guaranteed income from the U.S. federal government for another 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And why would they, you know, from a financial standpoint, why would they want to turn off that funding source? We're saying there are obviously other considerations, there are moral considerations that they should take into effect on this question, but from a company's perspective, it's hard to do. That's cheap money.
Does it make any difference that their headquarters are in another country, in France, right?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well, that, you know, normally these sorts of private contracts are handed over to American companies, sort of traditional, you know, Congress, pork belly, support your district sorts of thing. I did think it was interesting that the primary contractor for the game was a French company, but all of the subsidiaries for the game, the work that's contracted out for the actual programming and development are U.S. companies, including this really big military technology and information services contractor, Digital Consulting Services, which is based in Newberry Park, California, that has, you know, multi-million-dollar contracts working on weapon systems for the Navy and the Department of Defense and Army. So a lot of the smaller companies are U.S.-based companies.
The weapons industry in this country is, and the arms manufacturing industries in this country are so tightly embedded into the economy that we barely can't live without them. And now we're starting to put the same sorts of tentacles into the digital world and the gaming world and the entertainment world and so forth.
Certainly. There's actually a really excellent book on that by Nick Turse called The Complex, in which he looks at all these branding retail companies, you know, New Balance, tennis shoes, and, you know, obviously General Electric and Nestle and all of these kinds of companies that have huge military contracts with the U.S. military, Army, Air Forces, etc., and how those sorts of contracts are really pervasive in American corporate culture at this point. There's hardly a Fortune 500 company that doesn't have a military contract.
Hmm. Well, Michael, I want to thank you for being with us. It's Michael Reagan. And I would urge our listeners to go to the internet and do a search on Michael's name, or also search for the article, U.S. Military Recruits Children, America's Army Video Game Violates International Law, and learn more about this. Michael, I want to invite you to come back anytime. We'll talk further on this topic when and if you do any more demonstrations outside any other these companies, let us know, and we'll try and see what we can do, because this is a really important piece of our culture these days.
Okay, Susan, thanks so much.
That was Michael Reagan speaking about a protest held outside the San Francisco offices of video game developer Ubisoft and its contract with the U.S. military. With me on the phone now is Bill Simpich, the lawyer representing the concerns of the people of San Francisco about this game. I asked Bill Simpich to describe the meeting with Ubisoft on August 6th.
Well, it was amusing. The first conversation of the two happened a few days before the actual face-to-face meeting. In that initial meeting on the phone, it was only done after we kind of persisted. They wouldn't respond to our mail. We pushed them on the subject, saying, "Look, we got the president of the school board wants to come visit with you all, and get the story straight." And so they tried to. The president was a nice guy, I must say up front, although we didn't agree on a lot. His position was that I want you to keep it hush hush, but we're getting out of this business because we're not making enough money at it.
Hmm.
And I wouldn't agree to make it hush hush because I hadn't made any agreements with him before he made such a statement. So I was amused by that. I think he was probably being relatively straight with me in that conversation. We could talk more about it. On the day of, he initially sent out his press relations people, and we persisted. And eventually he came out, which we appreciated. Cordial enough conversation. The bottom line for him was the bottom line. He claimed that our presence didn't have anything to do with him deciding to get rid of America's army. I'm not sure that's true. And what was most interesting to me is that he wouldn't make any commitment about whether they were going to break their contract with the Army, which right now extends till 2015.
Mm-hmm. Can they do that?
I think you can do almost anything in a situation like this. You know, if it's not going well for you, I think the Army would rather get out of it rather than cause a big flap. What the Army really wants here is a nice smiley face in front of its activity. Ubisoft, with its, you know, games about hamsters as well as war, managed to serve a lot of interest.
Does it matter that Ubisoft is actually headquartered in France and not here?
Not to us. We got the president of the North American division right here.
Okay, but contractually, I mean, could they continue doing it if they just closed down their San Francisco office?
Oh, well, they could. It's about three things going on here. One is Ubisoft, I think, is rightfully very worried about our campaign getting out of control in their eyes, because San Francisco is militant about, you know, protest and anti-war activities in the first place. Another thing going on here is that they don't want a black eye in the media, and continuing to be selling this business, selling these games with a San Francisco headquarters could be very bad press for them. And America's Army will do almost anything to avoid bad press. They've even tried to hide their central location in Emeryville, which, incidentally, we have uncovered, and probably will be visiting there sometime.
Now, what is that one?
Well, this one is the one that's directly tied into the Fort Ord activities. You see, the way America's Army is set up is they're really a weapons testing program and an intelligence program on kids, when you get right down to it.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about Ubisoft is, they're, you know, they charge money for their game rather than doing it free,
mm-hmm.
like the folks online with the PCs. So Ubisoft may or may not be telling us the truth when they say they're not making enough money, because they are having to sell theirs at $35, $40 a pop against the product, which is free if you have a PC. We made a strategic decision, which I think is right, not to focus on the Tom Clancy software, much as I hate that stuff,
mm-hmm.
because we wanted to focus specifically on the recruiting software, which America's Army comprised.
Now, was he aware when you talked with him about the optional protocol on the involvement of children in armed conflict?
You bet he was. And he ducked and weaved and bobbed, you know, but he wouldn't talk about it directly, but he was aware of it. And I couldn't help but notice that the time they chose to discontinue the game was right about the time that the presentation went by the ACLU and Women's International League for Peace and Freedom to the UN, saying, you know, this game is terrible.
And so they're also aware, of course, about the Andromeda database and how these names could potentially be used.
Right. But they are aware that the Army has it. He said something very funny, which I'll quote. He said, "I'm not sure whether we have it, but if we did have it, we would never give it to the Americans."
Ah.
Which kind of falls in line with the old joke about French being more anti-war than now. The president's the kind of guy who'll flash us a peace sign and says good things about peace, but he also indicated that he was in favor of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Uh-huh. Of course, he doesn't have any direct connection to it. He doesn't have anyone that he knows there.
No. It was interesting. His direct connection was more in terms of the impact of his video games on his family, and he said to us with great pride that he'd won his wife over to actually being willing to play a video game with him.
So what are the next steps?
Next steps for us, I think, are two. One is we've got to take a long look about whether we're actually going to file a lawsuit against this company. I've done my share of, you know, lawsuits that I knew would lose or thought would lose, but did it because it was the right thing to do, versus one that would actually win. This is a case I'd like to see if we could actually win. Because I don't want to give people false hope on something like this. I think that, and I don't think there's a lot to discover in a lawsuit in any case here. We know the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think the better strategy, ultimately, if we can't win a lawsuit, is a political one. And generally, I lean in favor of political resolutions anyway, because it's not made by a small group of people, which is basically what a lawsuit is.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a large group of people to really become aware of this software, its dangers, strategic ways to try to scrub it out of our culture, which I got to say, it's going to take a generation.
Yeah.
It took us a generation to get here.
I mean, that's the thing that troubles me the most is, number one, there are so many parents are simply not aware of what they're buying and putting in their house in front of their kids, and the unconscious push towards the military.
We go back to the Space Invaders in 1980. We've raised a generation of fighter pilots,
mm-hmm.
and now we're networking big and hard with Hollywood in the military. And, this is way past Rambo. You know, this goes into creeping into every corner of our lives. But specifically with our kids, I hate these video games. I'll be the first to say it. But I really, really hate America's Army because you're taking impressionable 13-year-olds and getting them enmeshed in military culture and enmeshed in making a probable choice to move towards the military before they really understand all those implications. I'm not anti-military per se. But there's lots of dangerous things with the military that people have to know, especially in times of war like now.
And especially given the coercion, actually, that the recruiters use, this No Child Left Behind Act, Michael and I talked about that a little bit too, but the concern is really that parents, even if they wanted to, simply can't stop the recruiters from accessing their kids.
No, it really comes down to, you know, the best meaning of the word family values. Raising your kid on games that teach you how to shoot and hunt and be a gorilla, you know, simply don't have any place in everyday life. And these games, as far as I'm concerned, are the epitome of fascism. Can't say that strongly enough. I mean, who wants to teach their kid how to creep around walls, shoot people in the head and laugh about it? You know, there's just nothing funny about it. And I'm not, you know, I played Army when I was a kid. I'm not saying playing Army is bad, but I'm saying these games do something to you neurologically. One study I like to bring up that I found on the web once, and I can't give you the site as we speak, but they said the effects of this game are identical with cocaine. You know, I mean, this is a very strong neurological impulse it's reaching, and it's reaching all this subconscious circuitry in the psyche that we don't know enough about, but we know from watching our kids in action after they've played a lot of it, that it doesn't do them any good. And, you know, our kids are the first generation that are really fully imbued in these things. And you take a look at the child surveys, what they're saying is, you know, it's not good for these kids. They're shut down. They're more violent. Listen to the music, too. If the music doesn't portray a lack of musicality, a lack of rhythm, you know, a hardness? What does?
Well, in fact, I've done a lot of interviews with soldiers, and one of them, he was in a firefight in Baghdad. A civilian was killed, and this kid completely flipped out. And what he said was, well, this is nothing like video games.
Yeah. I like to bring up my 12-year-old daughter, who loves video games. And when she heard I was in the middle of this campaign, she just turned, and I don't let her bring, you know, any Xboxes or any of that stuff into the house. I say, you can play on the PC, and you can't play the violent stuff. But she plays at other people's houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I've said that's all right. But when she found out I was involved in this campaign, she goes, forget you. I love that game. And happily, we had a young 20-something fellow over at the house who's a video games producer. He goes, you know, I just want you to know the guys are driving tanks in Iraq. They're often playing, you know, video games and watching MTV while they're blowing people's heads off.
That's right.
And
yeah.
That got her leaving her jaw hanging open.
Bill Simpich, it's great to have you with us to add to this show from the legal perspective, and I'm going to invite you to, you know, stay in touch with us. Give us a call when the next piece of this puzzle starts to fall into place.
Yes, I think that'll be hopefully this autumn when we take it to the Board of Supervisors and ask them to take action to, if possible, ban any making or production of these recruiting games within the city limits based on international law.
We will look forward to hearing more about that.
Thank you.
That was Bill Simpich voicing his concerns about video games in general, and specifically America's Army, in the meeting he had with the director of the San Francisco branch of Ubisoft. Before we end our show for today, one more word about military recruiting and recruiters. Given the measures that the United States military is going to recruit our youth and to make its recruiting quotas, the chances of knowing a young person who is being actively recruited is high. I know from volunteering on the GRI's hotline that the recruiters are very aggressive and more often than you think present information to a potential recruit that is not quite accurate, despite Army regulations that govern the behavior of recruiters and recruitment. USA REC Regulation 601-45 specifically prohibits recruiters from misrepresenting and coercing future soldiers. This is a selection of the regulation. Again, it is USA REC Regulation 601-45. Recruiters will not knowingly mislead or misinform a prospect or applicant regarding any aspect of processing, entitlements, benefits, or other aspects of the Army. This includes conditional enlistments in which an applicant enlists on a recruiter's assurance that the applicant's prospects for selection for another program will improve. Other examples include false promises of cash bonus, Army College Fund, student loan repayment program, regaining custody of dependent children prior to completion of first term of enlistment, overseas assignments, or a specific station of choice. It continues, that is Regulation 601-45, recruiters will not threaten, coerce, or intimidate any person for the purpose of inducting a member to the military. Also will not represent the likelihood of being apprehended and ordered to active duty. It also includes obstructing an individual from being separated from service. Although recruiters may properly attempt to resell an applicant future soldier, they will not unreasonably delay the process of an applicant future soldier's request for separation. Again, that's USA REC Regulation 601-45. You can find out more about it at the GRIHotline.org or by calling 877-447-4487. That number again, 877-447-4487. We'll go out today with an interview with decorated Army personnel at the PAX 2007, that is the Penny Arcade Expo, where they market America's Army. This Army personnel is describing the resources put into the product. I ask you to please note the reference to the Army recruiters who are on hand to answer any questions for visitors to this event.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Ryan over here, and I found myself at the America's Army's booth, and I got to tell you, I'm blown away. This is, first of all, this is Tommy Riemann. Is that how you say it?
Tommy Riemann.
And Tommy, you are basically the public relations specialist for America's Army, correct?
Yes, I am.
Now, this is an awesome booth, I have to admit. Robert Koo, one of the guys that runs the Penny Arcade Expo, said you guys got one of the best things in there. But right here, I'm actually pretty impressed. You guys are showing off America's Army True Soldiers for the Xbox 360 for the first time, correct?
That's correct. The game comes out October or mid-October, and we're really looking forward to getting it out on in the stores.
Now, this is you on the cover of this game, correct?
It is me. We actually shot this down in Fort McClellan, Alabama, and we had Tim Tatter, the photographer, and it was a lot of fun shooting that shot.
Beautiful picture, too. And I have to show this off, man. This is awesome. This is for real. This is real heroes. This is an action figure, and it's of Tommy Riemann. And you have been awarded the Silver Star. That is awesome. It's a pleasure to meet you, sir. That's badass. And so now, anything you can tell us about the 360 version that you guys are showing off for the first time here? Will we see a demo on Xbox Live Arcade or anything like that?
Well, you can actually come in and play it. Right now, one of the highlights we have in there is the technology. As far as the UAV Raven operator and close air support, you can call for fire. And to me, that's my favorite part of the game, as well as going in and firing a saw and moving into teamwork. We're trying to highlight the Army values and warrior ethos within the game, and I think it shows when you go on and try to play as a team instead of an individual.
Now, I'll admit I'm unfamiliar with the 360 version. I'm very familiar with the PC version you guys sitting over here. Is it going to work the same as the PC version, and then it's going to have multiplayer, and you'll be basically on the U.S. forces every time you're playing?
Yeah, you'll be all U.S. forces. One of the cooler things we have in this game is reward points outside of the game. So when you've done so well, you've scored so many points, you can go win actual prizes like an action figure, a T-shirt, or a jump with the Golden Knights. We have a lot of prizes that you can win as far as coming in and playing the game.
How does somebody actually claim that prize? Is it connected to their Xbox Live gamer tag?
They come in and it's on their Xbox Live gamer tag. They can reveal their codes on the America's Army website at americasarmy.com. And you can claim your prize there.
That's cool. Now, does it have a single-player component?
It does have a single-player component, and it's not near as fun as the online, or Xbox Live is where it's at. So we can play up to 16, or I think it's 16-player support. And the cooler thing is you can actually choose to be a leader and run your guys through. The other thing is you can have a parental control. So if you don't want your child taking a virtual life, you can use a non-lethal munition round like a paintball round and take out that person, and they just take a seat instead of falling down and dying.
That's so awesome. That sounds like a really good tournament game for people that are way into tournaments, and we do tournament TV, so I'm sure it'll be one of the games we'll be looking forward to in October.
Right on. Red Storm did a great job with it, so we're looking forward to seeing what people think of it.
That's a good deal. Now, there's a couple other things you guys got in the booth. You got this awesome section over here where these gentlemen are basically giving everybody a run-through on the PC version of America's Army, correct?
Right, we got the PC here. I think there's 8 setups. They all can play simultaneously together. We have the Wrapped H2. This is just for fun and show. We have a booth full of recruiters over here, and they're just there to provide education or information for anybody that wants to know a little bit more about the Army. And then if you go behind the curtain, we have what we call the Virtual Army Experience.
You mind sneaking us in there real quick?
Let's go.
All right, let's do it. Wait until you guys see this. There's a sneak peek. Look at that. Oh, it's awesome. Okay, this is amazing, by the way.
So basically, they'll come in. They just went through registration line, and it's basic questions, your name, age, what are you interested in? Because we're trying to find out if you want to know more about the Army. And then you'll come in here and get a mission statement and briefing. That's what the gentleman's doing now. And then they're going to show them how to use the rifle. And then they mount in a Humvee, going through convoy security, being a security element for a special forces team, going in to extract a high-value target. And the mission's about 15 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
Right now, we just have one Humvee set up. We actually have a thing deployed throughout the country. This weekend, it's in Indianapolis. It goes about 40 events, and it's called the Virtual Army Experience. And it's 10,000 square feet, and it's an inflatable dome. And inside it, up to 8 battlefield stations can play, where 40 people are connected online all together playing in a simulated battlefield.
That sounds amazing. You said it's in Indianapolis?
It's in Indianapolis this weekend. It's in Cleveland. Yeah, Cleveland next weekend. And normally we hit up air shows, NASCAR events, NHRA. And so far it's been a huge success.
Any idea off the top of your head when it's going to be heading out a little bit more West Coast?
Miramar, I think, is the closest time to West Coast, and that's in October.
That's too long. I gotta get to this thing. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, check it out online at americasarmy.com. The schedule's there, and you know, hopefully we'll be coming up this way sometime.
Right on. Now, these guys are actually getting in here. I know we're about running out of time, but I want to see this thing rolling if I can.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when these guys get it on the screen, are we going to see polygons, just, you know, like a really detailed-looking version of the PC game? Is that what we're going to see? Or?
Yeah, it's the same format, same software implemented into the game or into the virtual experience. So they're just going to be riding in the vehicles, and you'll see they're inside the simulated city, and they're pulling security for that SF team.
Do you mind before they get started if we sneak up and see this gun a little bit closer?
Cool.
Thanks, man.
It's an MP49 saw, a squad automatic weapon, and it's basically the same rifle used for soldiers today. This is just used with laser shot technology. It's an airsoft weapon, and it's registered on the screen with a laser, and it's all light sensitive too, so it's a little off because of the display, but
sure. And it looks really, really good. The immersion you get with the three screens like that is something else, huh?
Well, we actually, for the Virtual Army experience, we've gone to five screens.
Really?
And we're waiting on the technology to do 360.
Wow. That is fantastic.
Right now, they're just entering into the city. Eventually, they'll start to get more resistance. And right now, normally we have an RPG capability.
Yeah.
Basically, when the RPG is shot at the vehicle, there's a big hammer that smacks the bottom of the truck. But it should be up and running tomorrow. It was broken today, and we're waiting for a new one to come out.
Do you mind if I come back tomorrow?
Oh, you can come back as much as you want.
All right. I definitely will be making my way this way, but I think we're out of time. So thank you so much, Tommy. Real pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. Definitely a pleasure. And, yeah, so there's America's Army. We're definitely going to come back here and check us out tomorrow when they get the air cannon underneath and lift it up. But back to us at the booth.
And that's our show for today. You can listen to any of our other shows on recruiters and recruitment by visiting our website, www.raisingsandradio.org. As always, you're invited to email me at susan@raisingsandradio.org and suggest shows you'd like to hear. Thanks for listening to Raising Sand Radio on KZSU Stamford FM 90.1, where views expressed are those of the host and guests and not Stanford University.
Colors that you fly, love just one nation, and the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry, it's no other choice. God bless the people now. Cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa. Flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy, I sing this one refrain. We can chase down